to your Epsom and Newell Talking Newspaper for Thursday, the 12th of October, 2017, issue number 2152. Our readers today are Camilla Hughes, Simon Gale and Jean Roberts. Our recordist is Joe Larkin. And this is Penny with the leading article from the Epsom and Newell Guardian under the headline, Cuts to Support Hit Like a Ton of Bricks. A desperate mum says she will demonstrate outside the Houses of Parliament if necessary to fight for her son's disability benefits. Single parent Wendy Measure, 48, says she has had to take a new job as well as payday loans to help pay for the care of her son, Charlie, after his personal independence payments, PIP, were cut. Charlie, 25, has both Addison's disease and type 1 diabetes, which means stress can cause him to be hospitalised or even stop his heart completely, says Wendy. She said he doesn't leave his room, he can't interact with people, he doesn't know, and he sleeps for 15 hours a day, and his steroids make him see things and repeat himself. Following an assessment of Charlie in March, the Department for Work and Pensions, DWP, said that he didn't qualify for the daily living allowance component of PIP and that he should receive just £22 a week, which is the lower rate of mobility benefit. That's despite a long appeals process, after which a court ruled last year that Charlie should be awarded the lower rate for both components. Mum Wendy, a gas engineer who lives with her son at Andover Close in Epsom, said Charlie had ended up being hospitalised 3 times in 1 week due to the stress and that she had been forced to take a new job with longer hours to afford his upkeep. She said it doesn't affect the assessor's lives, but it hits mine like a ton of bricks. I'm using payday loans to keep up. I'm a fighter. I'm knackered and I'm tired, but I will be outside the Houses of Parliament with a banner if I have to be. I'm sick and tired of this government not giving us the help. I think it's disgusting. A DWP spokeswoman said, decisions for PIP are made following consideration of all the information provided by the claimant, including supporting evidence from their GP or medical specialist. Anyone that disagrees with a final decision can appeal. The family is appealing for his PIP to be reinstated, backed by a letter expressing the full support of Mr. Swift's doctor. There is yet no date set for a hearing. And before we start, I've just got one short message to give you all. We've heard from one of our listeners that the disruption in Epsom will last for 16 weeks. And the buses, the 418 and the 467, that's the 418 and the 467, will no longer go around to the clock tower, but go to the station.
Hello, this is Camilla. Refugee event, heartwarming. Refugees and hosts share experiences. More than 120 people came together to meet and learn about refugees in Epsom and send hundreds of items to Syria and Iraq. The meeting at St Joseph Church on Saturday had speakers and demonstrations in Syrian cooking, henna hand painting, music and dancing led by refugees. Among the speakers were Mohammed Hamid, a refugee from Sudan, Ingrid Van Loo Plowman, a refugee host who has had 9 guests so far, including Mr. Hamid, Amber Bauer, founder of Donate for Refugees, Nina Kay, Epsom resident and founder of Refugees at Home, and a representative of the Ali Walid Welfare Trust. Joe Shering from the Epsom Refugee Network said, "The event was amazing for connecting people who feel they want to do something to help. They were able to learn what is going on locally and how to get involved. It was brilliant to welcome refugees living in this area and for them to see for themselves what strong local support there is for their plight. We were amazed at the number of people who attended and the level of engagement, with so many people offering help. Attendees donated £520 in cash to be shared between Anya Aid and Samara Aid, as well as a large number of items that will be sent to the Middle East. These include 136 packs of underwear, 343 toothbrushes or tubes of toothpaste, 30 packs of nappies, 116 packs of sanitary towels, and 145 kilograms of food. Nina Kay from Refugees at Home said it's really heartwarming to see how many people want to help refugees in this country, especially in Epsom and Newell, where many of them are being hosted by kind people. We are desperate for more hosts, especially in Epsom, where there is a growing community of hosts and guests who meet regularly at the Zigzag Cafe.
Hello, Simon here. Plans incoherent. Plans to turn the empty Wells Centre into new homes have been labelled incoherent. A mini community facility, playground and car parking spaces, as well as 25 new homes, have been proposed by Councillor Ebba Kington on behalf of the Residents Association, RA, of Epsom and Newell. But Conservative opposition councillor for Epsom West, Bernie Muir, said she did not think the plans were the right solution for the centre on Spa Drive, Epsom. She said there is clearly a need for new local housing for young people struggling to get on the housing ladder, but the RAs seem unable to establish a coherent strategy giving permission for new executive homes and not the flats and starter homes that first-time buyers need. There is a real anger that rather than seeking out visionary solutions, RA councillors prematurely close the facility, justifying their decision with bogus political excuses. The plans put forward are incoherent and unfeasible, demonstrating a total lack of understanding of the available land and the Wells area as a whole. Worse, RA councillors have reneged on promises to maintain a community centre on site by proposing a derisory community space that is so small it can only fail. And the playground location was at best confused and at worst impossible. Back in December 2015, ruling RA councillors voted at a full council meeting to join adult social services from the Wells Centre with the Longmead Centre in Sefton Road at a rebranded Epsom Centre in order to offset central government cuts. Chairman of the Strategy and Resources Committee, Councillor Neil Dallin, said in 2016 that amalgamating services was the best way to make savings after a shortfall in funding from central government of about 2.5 million by 2019 to 2020. Commenting on plans for the World Centre, Councillor Kington said, "There are no architectural plans yet, but there will still be a community facility that will be run by the residents themselves. There's nothing concrete yet, so no plans in that sense. But when they are produced, a meeting will be called to hear what residents have to say. We've lost 1.5 million in government grants in the last few years, so we have to make sure our services pay their way and we use the assets in the best possible way."
Hello, I'm Jean. Actor inspired by heroic story. Superhero turns to true life struggles. He's no stranger to superheroics, having played none other than Spider-Man on the big screen. But Epsom actor Andrew Garfield faced up to genuine real-life heroism on his latest project. In Breathe, which opened the BFI, that's the London Film Festival, last night, Garfield plays Robin Cavendish, a man who was given 3 months to live after being paralysed by polio, aged 28, in the 1950s. But, alongside his driven wife Diana, played by Claire Foy, goes on to defy doctors, live a full life and become an advocate for disabled rights. Not only is it an inspiring love story that tackles prejudice around disability, but it is a true story. Cavendish was the real-life father of producer Jonathan Cavendish, and that makes it more powerful. A former pupil at Priory Prep School in Banstead and City of London Freeman School in Ashted, Garfield said, "There's something truly heroic about the life that Robin created with Diana and their friends. What is so important to highlight is that it was a community effort. It wasn't this one man and his superheroics, which is a story that we get fed a lot in our culture now, but I think there is some other story that I think will save us from the terrible situation that we are in culturally and socially, and that we are all absolutely needed, that everyone has some genius to offer." One of the remarkable things about the script and the story and Jonathan and his parents' life is that it took a village. It really did. Breathe, which is also the directorial debut of Lord of the Rings and Planet of the Apes actor Andy Serkis, is the latest in a line of critically well-received roles for Garfield, following on from his multi-award nominated lead in Hacksaw Ridge last year. And it was the script from Bill Nicholson, who wrote Gladiator and Les Mis, that drew him in. The 34-year-old said, "Bill's script is so moving, and it is very rare that you read a film script that just kills you and makes you a blithering mess of a person in a pile of your own tears. And that's what happened to all of us. And we just tried to do that justice and to do the lives of Jonathan's parents justice. For me, it was just a template of how to live. What Robin and Diana did, somehow, they made such a joyous, inspired and fully lived life experience out of terrible loss. That's why I think it is such a universal story and an inspiring story."
Quota threatens green belt. Government housing suggestion prompts concern for rural space. Epsom and York Council has launched a consultation to discuss whether to build on Greenbelt land. This follows a consultation from the Department for Communities and Local Government, suggesting the borough should build 579 homes a year, much more than the locally assessed need of 418. This increase of 39% from the local figure to the government's figure is the highest in Surrey. Chairman of the Epsom and Ewell branch of the Campaign to Protect Rural England, Tim Murphy, said, "Why is the government insisting that Epsom and Ewell continues to accommodate those who just want to move out from the capital? The government says it is for local communities and authorities to determine their level of housing provision and whether or not their greenbelt boundaries should be altered. But at the same time, it's imposing these top-down housing targets. What guarantees are there that the right sort of affordable, mostly social housing would be provided? In fact, all the evidence is that house builders will do all they can to build those properties from which they can make the most money. Population in the borough is expected to rise by 20,000 before 2032, and the council says there is space for about 3,000 new homes in built-up areas. National planning policy requires that the council look at all options. With 43% of the borough designated green belt land, the council is forced to consider building in those areas. The consultation contains four proposals: urban intensification, increasing population density, which would mean tall buildings of at least six stories, releasing some green belt land, releasing more green belt land, or finding the balance and increasing density in some areas and reviewing the green belt for building upon. Councillor Graham Dudley, chairman of the Licensing and Planning Policy Committee, said, "We have been as open as possible with residents in telling a story as it really is. There is high demand for more housing in Epsom and Ewell, but only a limited amount of available land on which to build it. The council's consultation will run until November the 6th. To take part, visit epsom-ewell.gov.uk/local-plan.
Dad refuses to give in to cancer. A dad of three with terminal cancer has proved doctors wrong and raised £80,000 for charity. Kevin Webber, 52, of Newbury Gardens, Epsom, was told he had 2 years to live after being diagnosed with prostate cancer. That was 3 years ago. In the past year alone, he has run 1,000 miles to raise £30,000 for research into the disease, which affects one in every 8 men in England. On receiving his diagnosis, Kevin said he saw himself as dead wood. Couldn't see the point in living, but he said running made him feel alive. He said, "I'd be lying if I said it's not depressing, knowing you're going to die soon. I have short-term challenges, which make you get up in the morning. My doctors are always surprised. My oncologist at the Royal Marsden has given up telling me I can't do things." Kevin defied doctors yet again last weekend when he completed the Nottingham Marathon despite having a leg injury. He said, "The night before I was having a curry with my wife and I said, what am I saving myself for? I had the option of not running and waiting for my leg to be better, but at any time the cancer could take a turn for the worse and I could never run again." Kevin completed the race the next day. The moment he crossed the finishing line marked the sum total of 1,000 miles which he had ran this year. "It was a fantastic day. It was an amazing, emotional and brilliant experience," said the former banker, who sustained his leg injury on a run across volcanic lava in Iceland around a month ago. He added, "Every man in England has a 1 in 8 chance of getting prostate cancer. And if your dad has it, it's 1 in 4. My dad had prostate cancer, and by raising money, I genuinely believe I am reducing the chances of my children being killed by it. If you get it early enough, there are treatments. It would be great if one day the money I raise made a difference."
Parking fees to save the countryside. Charges at rural locations will cover cuts. Surrey's countryside car park users could start being charged after the council has finished its consultation that launched this week. Citing budget concerns, Surrey County Council is asking residents to consider proposals affecting Chobham Common, Wisley and Ockham Commons, Whitmore Common, Norbury Park and Rodborough Common. Cabinet Member for the Environment Mike Goodman said, "This consultation is a vital part of our plans to preserve and improve Surrey's beautiful countryside. We want to hear our residents' views on what matters to them as we face the challenge of dealing with unprecedented budget pressures, particularly from rising need across our care services. With the council needing to save more than £100 million from its annual budget, our aim is to make the management of Surrey's countryside self-financing. Charging at our car parks could form part of that, with those benefiting most contributing more, so everyone can still enjoy the wonderful Surrey countryside we all value. The money raised would be ring-fenced to maintain and improve our countryside. I hope residents will contribute to this consultation so they can help shape the decisions we have to make. To take part in the consultation, visit Surrey Says, that's all one word, .co.uk/e-i-directorate-program-group/pay-and-conserve and give your opinion before November 6th.
Join Fantastic Beasts at Workshop. Fantastic Beasts will be coming to life at the Ashley Centre in this October when children can make dragon or unicorn gliders in the style of J.K. Rowling's creation. Ashley Bears Kids Club in the Ashley Centre is held every second Sunday in the month and hosts free activities and workshops. On Sunday, October the 8th, between 10:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m, Kids Club members can also make snowflake shapes and enjoy Narnia in the cosy corner when storytellers bring this amazing tale to life.
Caged bird abandoned on doorstep. A Chessington woman had a surprising house guest when she opened her door to find an abandoned canary. The woman's doorbell rang, but there was nobody there when she answered, apart from the small bird in a cage on her front step. She called the RSPCA and they arranged to collect the bird, which is now called Tuppence, from her home in Clayton Road on Tuesday, September the 26th. Animal welfare officer Carl Holmes said, "We're really grateful to this lady for finding the bird and keeping her safe until we could collect her. The poor little bird was just left on a stranger's doorstep. Whoever abandoned her clearly wanted to ensure that someone would find her and help as they rang the doorbell before running away."
Creative Teams Battle for Prize. A competition which aims to encourage creativity within the marketing industry while supporting a good cause is now open for entries. The agency which wins the Creative Shootout 2018 will receive $250,000 media prize fund, as well as $30,000 in fees from Food Share. The charity is responsible for feeding 500,000 people a week and redistributes good surplus food to more than 6,700 frontline groups. The prize fund is being offered by IXL, one of the UK's leading digital advertising partnerships, which represents more than 800 trusted local news sites, including News Quest titles such as News Shopper, the South London Guardian series, Surrey Comet, and Richmond and Twickenham Times. IXL, which was formed by a UK Media First partnership between 30 of the UK's regional news publishers, including News Quest, Johnson Press and Arshant, has teamed up with the Creative Shootout, the awards for the creative industry, to launch this year's competition. To enter, agencies need to give the judges 60 seconds of content on why they have the creativity to run a marketing campaign for Fair Share. 8 entries will be shortlisted and go on to a live final at BAFTA in London on January the 25th, when they will receive the real brief from Fair Share. The team will get 4 hours to work on their ideas before pitching them to the judges and live audience. Henry Four Walker, CEO of NewsQuest, a founding partner in IXL, said, "IXL will serve to communicate the winning creative and message to every corner of the UK through 800 trusted local news brands and digital audience of 23 million people a month. The Creative Shootout is unique with its real-time focus, and our 250,000 media spend will hopefully make a meaningful difference to the issue of food poverty in the UK. Entries close on November 28th. For details, visit creative-shootout.com.
Appeal for witness to come forward. Police, have braved brave newsagent staff for foiling an attempted armed robbery in Banstead. Three men got out of a vehicle and approached the Surrey News and Mini Market in Rectory Lane at about 4:20pm on Wednesday, September the 27th. One of them is believed to have had a gun and another a knife. They attempted to kick in the door before fleeing in a silver vehicle. Detective Inspector Peter Harvey said the attempted armed robbery of the news agency in Banstead was a frightening ordeal for the staff. Their brave actions and quick intervention prevented anything being taken on this occasion. "We have already had a huge response from the local community and are extremely grateful for the information they have provided. Surrey Police wants to speak to a man who might have seen the incident. He's described as in his mid-20s, of large build, 5'5", with short brown curly hair, and was wearing a red T-shirt." Detective Inspector Harvey said, "I would like to ask anyone that may have seen something suspicious or have any information to contact Surrey Police as a matter of urgency. Did you see a silver car with four males wearing balaclavas? Anyone with information can call 101 or visit report.police.uk, that's all small letters, quoting reference number 451 70106 777. or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Man took his life on day he was facing jail term for child sex offences. A Lower Kingswood man took his own life the day he was due to be sentenced for sex offences against two children. An inquest is concluded. Derek Rowe, 69, a retired chemist, was found dead on July the 7th last year by his friend Michael Wyatt at Mr. Rowe's home in Mogador Road, Mogador. On Monday this week, Coroner Christopher Sutton Mattox recorded a verdict of suicide at an inquest held at Surrey Coroner's Court in Woking. He said Derek Alan Rowe met his death by his own hand. This was a man who had had a very successful and respected career, both as a scientist and an academic, and with his own companies. He had many friends and former partners he was close to, but this sadly came to an end after his conviction for historical child sex offences. He recorded the cause of death as being asphyxia, with a secondary cause attributed to a toxic dose of phenobarbital, a substance that slows the activity of the brain and nervous system. Mr. Rowe was found dead on a sun lounger on the evening of July the 7th, 2016, hours after he failed to attend court for his sentencing, at which he was expected to be jailed. The evidence of Mr. Rowe's friend Lawrence Butler was read to the court. Mr. Butler stayed with Mr. Rowe in the 2 days before his death, sleeping on the sofa. He had agreed to look after Mr. Rowe's cats whilst he was in prison and wanted to show him he was serious about the offer. Mr. Butler said Mr. Rowe was worried about prison and how long he would be there. He said he was so used to being in control of his life every day and professional life, and this was the first time he had experienced not being in control. Mr. Butler said the night before his death, he and Mr. Rowe had watched films and drank whiskey. His friend had seemed exhausted and depressed. On Monday, the morning of July the 7th, Mr. Rowe had gone downstairs to see that one of his cats, called SpongeBob, had gone over to Mr. Butler, and Mr. Rowe remarked he would never see his cat again. Mr. Butler left the house at around 11:45 a.m. and Mr. Rowe said he would take a taxi to the court to go there and face his future. Speaking at the inquest, DC Simon Evans of Surrey Police said Mr. Rowe had ordered some of the items used in his suicide over the phone. He said that he had recovered phone calls of these orders where Mr. Rowe was adamant the items would arrive before July the 7th. He also confirmed to the court that a suicide note was found. DC Evans was asked by Mr. Sutton Mattox if it was unusual that someone convicted of those type of offences and facing a jail term would be released on bail. DC Evans said he thought it was unusual. But given his verdict, Mr. Sutton Mattox said he wanted to make no criticism of those involved in the decision to grant bail or make any recommendations based on that fact. However, he said, it must be recognised that those facing a significant custodial sentence, and maybe in particular those convicted of sexual offences, may be at particular risk of suicide. He concluded it was clear Mr. Rowe had intended to take his own life due to the level of planning and his words to his friends in the lead up to his death. Following the discovery of Mr. Rowe's body, controlled explosions were carried out at his house after unidentified chemicals were found there. It is understood that these are connected with his previous work as a chemist and were unrelated to his death.
Police seek photo of departing car. A motorbike rider is in hospital after a crash with a car that failed to stop in Ewell near the famous Green Man pub. Police say a Mercedes CLK and a Harley Davidson were involved in a crash in Cheam Road at 3:45 p.m. on Wednesday, September 27th. The motorcyclist sustained a serious leg injury. There were several people around, but the driver of the Mercedes did not stay at the scene, say police. Officers believe someone took a photograph of the car as it drove away. That person, or anyone else with information, is asked to call 101 or visit report.police.uk, quoting reference P172455 42, or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Motorsport fan auctions off signed guitar for Billy. A motorsport fan is auctioning a guitar signed by Status Quo in aid of a teenage racing driver who lost his legs after a crash. Billy the Whiz Munger, 18, from Charlwood, was left fighting for his life after a high-speed collision during a Formula 4 race at Donington Park in April this year. Although he survived, he was trapped inside his vehicle for 90 minutes and had to have both his legs amputated. The teenager has since got back into a specially adapted race car after he vowed to continue racing. Billy's accident has led to a flurry of donations to help him. Now Ian Dunbar, a motorsport enthusiast involved with the British Touring Car Championship, is auctioning a Fender Telecaster guitar signed by the members of Status Quo. Mr. Dunbar said, since his accident, Billy has shown the determination to not only continue his life and career to the full, but has already been back in a race car. I think rock music and motor racing go hand in hand, and I'm lucky enough to know a few people, and Status Quo kindly donated the signed guitar for auction. He had originally thought the guitar might raise £500, but after less than a day on eBay, the top bid has already reached £470. It's getting a lot of traction on social media, so who knows how much it'll raise, he added. Anything just to help Billy recover in his future career is great. The white Fender Telecaster has been signed by Francis Rossi, Andy Brown, John Rhino Edwards, Leon Cave and Richie Malone.
Award-winning student to receive certificate from MP. A student from Causton has been recognised as the Hospitality, Travel and Tourism Student of the Year 2017 at a national awards ceremony. The BTEC Awards were held on July the 7th at the Royal Horticultural Halls in London after a lunch reception in Parliament with MPs. Laura Smith is a student at Causton Sixth Form College after arriving from Stanley Park High School in Carshalton. MP for Carshalton and Wallington, Tom Brake, will present Laura with a certificate today, Thursday, at Causton College. After winning the award, she said, "I was really surprised to win and didn't expect to get this far. I knew I wanted to go to Causton College because it offered the courses in travel and tourism, which I couldn't do at school. I try and work hard at college, and this has been a great recognition of all the hard work I've put in during my course." Pearson's BTEC aims to equip students with skills to progress to higher education or go straight into employment. Almost a quarter of university entrants have now taken at least one BTEC.
Nurse got son out of danger before returning to crime scene to help injured man. And this mum is to receive an award for action in stabbing crisis. An Earlswood mum showed extraordinary courage to dodge a knife man in order to save the victim of a brutal stabbing. Anita Greaves thought she and her baby son were definitely going to die as a terrifying knife-wielding man advanced towards them down a train station platform. Seconds before, he had stabbed a man multiple times on a train that had just arrived at Forest Hill Station after shouting, "I want to kill a Muslim." Children's nurse Anita, 36, got her nine-month-old son Rex to safety by dodging the knife man, who has schizophrenia, and getting in a lift before showing astounding bravery to rush back to the scene of the stabbing in order to save the victim. Mum of two, Anita, has said that she was on autopilot and that anyone would do the same thing. But her exceptional valour in running towards danger to save a life has been recognised by her NHS colleagues and the High Sheriff of London, who is set to present her with an award. The act of courage took place as Anita waited for a train with her son on December the 12th, 2016. After finishing lunch with friends, she was confronted by hell. "It was just terrifying," said Anita. "I was certain we were definitely going to die." We had just been to lunch in Forest Hill with my friends, who were on maternity leave as well as me. We came from that to be confronted by hell. I was waiting on the platform with my baby, and people were screaming and running towards us. When it cleared, I could see a man in black walking calmly towards us with what looked like a gun in his hand. He was shouting to himself and walking towards us. I ran towards the lift off the platform and pressed the button and went up. When the door opened, he had come up the stairs. He was right in front of us. I covered my son to protect him and thought that was it. I closed my eyes because I didn't want to know if he was in the lift and managed to press the button to go down. Thankfully, we got away from him. Anita dashed to the exit of the train station where other passengers had fled. Someone told her that a man had been stabbed by the knifeman that she had dodged on the platform. Leaving her son in his pushchair in the care of someone at a safe distance, Anita ran back towards danger. "I don't know why I did it," she said. "I'm a nurse, so I think it was just autopilot. I thought I would most likely be the only one there who could help. I ran up the platforms, found the train, and saw that a man was lying on the floor in need of intensive medical help, so I got on the train. Anita was joined there by a police officer and a GP, and the trio stayed with the victim, Muhammad Ali. Mr. Ali had been repeatedly stabbed by schizophrenic Adrian Brown, 38, who was suffering from a psychotic episode. Brown had said he wanted to kill a Muslim before the attack. He's now in hospital. The mum of two, who works for the Evelina Children's Hospital, put pressure on the victim's wounds and spoke to him until paramedics arrived to take him to hospital. He would later make a full recovery. Anita received an award from her NHS Trust, Guy's and St Thomas's, after her colleagues found out about her actions. She is now set to be commended by the High Sheriff of London at a ceremony on October 19th.
And now for some letters. And this one is from Councillor David Simpson, who is the Conservative spokesman for Community Safety and Enforcement. Keep Police Station. "I would like to thank all those residents who have signed our petition over the summer to save Wimbledon Police Station. Working together with local MP Stephen Hammond, we have collected over 4,000 signatures. If you haven't yet signed, it's not too late to do so. Just go to www.savewimbledonpolicestation.co.uk. As many people have pointed out, it is ridiculous to close a police station that's so well located right in Wimbledon town centre, with its large nighttime economy and major transport hub, both of which need policing. Unfortunately, this seems to be a deliberate decision by the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, to target Wimbledon, without considering the impact on levels of crime and antisocial behaviour here. He has already cut police funds by removing £38 million from the police staffing budget, yet now he plans to close our police station. Together with residents, Merton Conservatives will continue fighting hard against the Mayor's proposals. Following our motion at the full council, we plan to go to City Hall shortly to present the petition to Sadiq Khan in person and to make the case for retaining Wimbledon Police Station. Hopefully, when presented with thousands of signatures, he will reconsider these misjudged plans."
This is a letter from Michael Bull, Conservative Councillor for Dundonald Ward. Objections were ignored. Having spoken against the Council's planning application for Merton Hall in April, which was described by a member of the Merton Planning Applications Committee, the PAC, as monstrous, I was determined to speak, and I did speak, against a new application for the building presented to the committee last Thursday evening. There were over 350 formal resident objections to the application and thousands signed a petition against it, yet Merton Labour were ready to put achieving their political priorities ahead of resident concerns, despite there being alternative solutions available. The council's application was sadly approved. The design of the development is going to be incongruous with the surrounding area. The heritage value of Merton Hall has been disrespected. No heritage statement was provided for the application, despite the fact it is a locally listed building. The development will lead to a loss of green space, parking space and privacy for local residents. And where were Abbey Ward's Labour councillors when the PAC gave this approval on Thursday evening? Shamefully, Councillor Andrew Judge spoke in favour of the application against the wishes of his residents, even though, in my opinion, the application is not substantially different to the April application that was refused, and which he abstained from voting on because of his conflicts of interest. Councillor Abigail Jones and Councillor Katie Neap also did not speak against this application. They were nowhere to be seen. None of these councillors are re-standing for election next year. I'm sure that Labour's new candidates for Abbey Ward will now claim, given half the chance, they would have stood up for Merton Hall, 80% of which will be demolished by this development, but none of them spoke against it last Thursday night. I'm proud that Councillor Daniel Holden, Councillor Stephen Crowe and Councillor Najib Latif, the Conservative councillors on the PAC, voted against this application, but sadly they were outvoted by the Labour councillors on the PAC. I hope that Abbey residents realise now that their local councillors will not speak up for their concerns when they differ from the priorities of this insensitive Labour administration.
And this is the editor's view. Beware those wearing fluorescent jackets. What is it about wearing a fluorescent jacket that gives people the idea that they're better than anyone else? If you want someone who already has the ability to be a Jobsworth and a tendency to be too big for their boots to become even more officious and unpleasant, just hand them a brightly coloured jacket. I guarantee they'll be ordering people around in no time. Perhaps their overzealous, despotic behaviour is the fault of the rest of us. After all, when met by such an individual dressed in their official plumage, we often follow their orders unquestioningly. Whatever the reason, I was unfortunate enough this week to experience a classic example of this behaviour at first hand. Driving down a smallish back street road looking for a parking place, I found my way suddenly blocked by the aforementioned fluorescent jacket, with its arms waving furiously. Worried she might be in trouble in need of assistance, I stopped immediately and offered my help. Imagine my surprise to be confronted instead by a heated response claiming I was breaking the law and threatening to call the police. It seems I had inadvertently driven the wrong way down a one-way road, or so I was told. But as I pointed out, there was absolutely no signage or road marking to support this unpleasant woman's view that this was a one-way street. This didn't stop her standing in the road illegally, I might add, to block my progress and insist I turn round. My reasoned arguments fell on deaf ears, as she informed me that although it wasn't an official one-way road, local consensus makes it one-way because her private school is at the end of the road. This, of course, is nonsense, and she's completely wrong. But always keen to avoid a confrontation if possible, I rose above the situation, reversed carefully, and returned in the direction I had come from. Other than the idiotic, illegal behaviour of a harridan in a bright yellow jacket, this incident raises several interesting issues. Firstly, she, and I believe she's the headmistress, claims private schools do not attract the same support from local authorities and cannot get safety measures installed outside the school gates. Can this really be true? Second, she claims if enough people accept the road should be one way, it should by default be treated as such by everyone. Surely this would lead to chaos.
This concludes the news section of today's recording.
The magazine section will follow after the introductory music.